Okay, so we're up to Perek Lamed Zayin, Pasuk Chaf Zayin. We are continuing in the discussion of Hashem describing or telling through Yeshaya that Sancheriv, his power, he is nothing more than an instrument in the hand of Hashem. Even though Sancheriv thinks that he, through his chokhmah and his might, physical power, was able to succeed in conquering the entire world, including most of Eretz Yisrael, that is incorrect. This was preordained. This has been decreed from the time of Maase Bereishis, or according to other Mefarshim, referring specifically to the goals of the Aseres HaShvatim from 73 years ago, the time of Amos. And here, Yeshaya continues to tell Sancheriv that your success is insignificant. V'yoshvehen, the people who lived on the earth, referring to either the entire world, depending on how we interpret this pasuk. We can interpret this pasuk in reference to the entire world, his success in conquering the entire world, or we can interpret this pasuk in reference to the Aseres HaShvatim and to the people living in around Yerushalayim. V'yoshvehen, the people that lived in these countries, in these cities, the inhabitants, kitzrei yod, they had literally small hands. That just basically means, a metaphor means, they're weak. They were weaklings. Hashem says, I brought it about that they were physically weak so that you had the ability to overcome them.
How did Sancheriv get the message? In other words, Yeshaya sent this to Hezekiah.
Correct.
So how does he get
it? It's a very good question. I don't know the exact answer. I don't know. So either it was relayed to him, or they were spies, or things got around. Like a press release, what?
Word of mouth.
I don't know. The same way today you wouldn't ask the question. Today, like, you know, just it's in an instant. It's already on a website. It's it's emailed.
It's on the 6 o'clock.
What?
On the 6 o'clock.
I can't hear.
Be careful what you say. They're gonna ask you cashers.
They already did. Okay, but any event, v'yoshvehen kitzrei yad, the inhabitants are short hands, they don't have power, and that's why you were able to conquer them. Chatu, they were broken. Chatu means to be broken. Vavoshu, and embarrassed. Okay, these are expressions that just basically mean that that I, Hashem, have made them weak so that you will be able to conquer them. Hayu esef sodeh, they were nothing more than grass of the field. Virak desha, and vegetation that grows, vegetables that grows along the fields. Chatsir gagos, weeds, grass that grows on the rooftops. Ushedema lifnei kama, shtema is when grain begins to grow. And suddenly there's a very strong, powerful wind. When the grain first begins to develop, it's extremely delicate. And if the winds are too strong, the wind can destroy, can pull out, blow out the kernel, the part of the grain that is essential to produce food. So that's what's happened to the Ushadim. It was like grain that was blown, lifnei kama, at this point in time, developing the grain. It's extremely weak and delicate. That's what all of the nations of the world were like before you. They were just nothing more than weeds and delicate grass, delicate grain, which can be easily overcome and conquered. Hashem says, I brought this about. It was my doing. I wanted you to come to power. I wanted you to conquer the world for whatever reason. That's now revealed here exactly what the reason is. And then afterwards to come and conquer the Aseres HaShvatim. And therefore don't take credit for what has happened. I saw Rav Schwab, he writes that as Gedarko and the other Mefarshim as well, is that why so many expressions? Kitzrayat, then it's Esef Sadeh, number 3 is Yirak Desha, number 4 is Chatzir Gagois, and then number 5 is Shedema Lifnei Kama. Now, if you want to go count the other two above, this Chatu Vavoshu, that would be a 6 and a 7. So he says, he doesn't allow it, but he says that every country has their own weakness. Okay, go study the Middle East. Each country has had their unique strengths and has their weaknesses. So each one of these expressions is a metaphor for a different type of weakness that an individual country had, where Sancheriv was able to exploit this weakness and overcome them. So that's why there are a number of expressions, total 7 expressions, seven different, each one of these things, the weakness of Shteimol of Nekama is not the same as the weakness of Esev Sadeh. Okay, I don't know the differences, but each one has a unique characteristic which represents, in the bigger picture of things, a weakness that a country would have against an enemy. The Shivtach of the Tzeitzcha V'yacha, Yodati, Hashem says, I know when you sit, I know when you go out, I know when you come, Yodati, I'm aware of all of your plans, the Ace His Ragezcha Eloi, and I know how and when you expressed your will to terrorize the world against me. Or His Ragezcha could also mean how you would rise up. You rose up in your arrogance, in your anger. Ragez literally means anger. We know that a lot of the what? They shook, the nation shook, they trembled. You tried to cause all of the nations to tremble before you, and that meant before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Yishai, now what does it mean of Shivtcha? It's very interesting. Rashi brings that from Retarikum Yonasim and Uzil. Rashi brings down the Shivtcha, there are three expressions. The Shivtcha, you're sitting and you're going out and you're coming in, Tagim Yonasan. Umesbicha be'etza. Shivtcha means when you sat with your cabinet, with your advice, with your general, when you planned. In the planning stage, Hashem says, I am well aware of your plans. That's what the word Shivtcha refers to. Tzeitzcha refers to Umefka Lubara Le'agra Karba. When you went out to wage war, and Ubayacha means when you Umeisech Le'ara Yisrael, when you enter into Eretz Yisrael. Three things. Your plans, your wars, and your will to conquer, and this, if you have entered Eretz Yisrael to conquer Eretz Yisrael, Hashem says, I am well aware. Hashem has the ultimate spy satellite, drones, and so on and so forth. And today, you would say no big deal, right? Today, supposedly, they're watching us wherever we go. They're watching us. They can see a dime from a satellite, supposedly. Right? If there's a dime lying on the floor, supposedly, anywhere in the world, they have technology today. So they say that they can zoom in and they can actually see the face of the dime. Ad kadei kach, incredible chachma. Yeah, we have all the different lawsuits with Google. What's it called? They look down on the maps. That's limited. Street views where they go out and take pictures. I'm talking about the satellites. When you go online, when you go down, when you look for the satellite view, you can see your house from satellite. They stop short. Don't think that you try to zoom in more and more and more. Oh, that's all the satellite can do. No. The satellite can go into your house. It can literally go into your house and see what's going on in your house. It's just that if they would do that, they would be put out of business very quickly. So they have to limit what they let the Hamoyan see. Hashem says, I don't need all of this technology. I know. The Shivtcha, we need this now generation. Kadosh Baruch Hu has given us all this technology in order to remind us that Kadosh Baruch Hu is not Kol Yochel. Kadosh Baruch Hu knows our thoughts, our actions. Hashem is watching. But here in ancient times, it's different. You know, it's a whole different. It's impossible for us to relate to this culture. And it wasn't even so long ago. I mean the technology has sprung upon us only very recently, relatively speaking. But Hashem says, don't think I don't know what you're doing. The Shivtcha, your plans, there were no wiretaps. And like today it's a joke, of course. You can tell us, of course, the boss of Adam knows exactly what's going on, so on and so forth. But then Hashem is saying, I know exactly what you're planning to do. I know about your wars, and I know about your plans to come and conquer Eretz Yisrael. The Ace His Ragetz Choylon, I know how you angered, how you tried to cause the world to tremble to be terrified. That was all revealed a lie before me. I am aware of all of your actions. Pasuk Chavtes, Yam, because Hisra Gezcha a lie, because you have caused the world to tremble before you, and this has come before me. Visha a Nancha, and your noise. When a king, when he mobilizes his army, he makes a lot of noise, both in the physical world and symbolically. You've caused a great commotion. Allah, the Oznoi, has entered my ears. Visanti, now hear the positive Visan. Therefore, Hashem says, I'm still in control. And although you think you're going to conquer Yerushalayim, I want to let you know, Visanti, you're nothing more in my eyes than an animal. And I'll put it there. There are two different techniques a person can use to guide an animal. Either you put a bit in the animal's mouth with a harness, and you hold the bit and you can move the bit, or you put a nose ring, a massive nose ring attached to the nose, and you hold the ring and you can move the animal around. Each one, I don't know the exact nature of the bit and the nose ring, but each one has a maila and a chasar. There's a certain maila in using the bit, and there's a maila in using the nose ring. Here the pasuk says,
"Maybe the bit usually ride on top, and we use the reins to."
That's another type of bit, but there's a bit they actually put. You learn himself the Shabbos, the prumbio shavipia. There's actually something they put in the mouth. They put in the mouth with a harness around the jaw. And it's put in the mouth, you actually hold the animal by the spit. But there's another technique where you don't put anything in the mouth. I guess you want the mouth to be free to eat. You want the animal to be happy. So when it does its work, it gets to eat. But you guide it by controlling its nose. How do you control its nose? With a certain type of ring. So here Hashem says that you, Sanhedrin, have nothing more than an animal. And I will put upon your nose and in your mouth the bit and the ring. The Samti Chachi. Be'apecha, in your nose, so it's similar to this reef now. Chachim really, we'll translate now. I'll put the ring in your nose, umiski, and the bit, bisfosecha, on your lips, meaning in your mouth, and I will guide you, I will control you fully. I'll have both types of instruments. Vahashivosicha, I will return you, baderech asher bosobo. I will return you back to your land. You come from Asher. The capital of Asher is Nineveh. And you'll be sent back home empty-handed. You think you're going to conquer Yerushalayim with all of your army. Your 185,000 soldiers. Nothing's going to happen. They're all going to die. And you and a few other people are going to return home empty-handed. Now, this is very interesting here. This is something which is very common, and it's good to focus on. Let's look at the Rashi. Harashi defines the word chachi and the word umiski. The more you learn, the more you notice this. It's not only here in Yeshaya, it's all over the place. It's a very interesting way of writing. It's even in davening. You have this also. I saw recently, I was studying part of tefillah. You have the same idea in davening. I don't remember exactly which part of davening, but this is very common. Now, let's see the Rashi pasuk kavtes, just to define these words. We once actually mentioned this before. Chachi kimin tavas. What is a chachi? So Rashi here says, it's a ring, like I told you, it's a ring. It's a ring which is attached to the nose, and you hold up the ring, and you're able to move the guard of the animal. But here Rashi right away says, he right away is making trouble. Where does this ring go? And you put it, besfas means on the lip, which really sounds more like a bit, the other item, but here he's put it in the lip. An animal that is good for nothing. An animal that is a wild, untamed animal. You don't trust the animal to walk on its own and not cause damage. You need to keep it under control. So you put this ring in its lip and you control it. Next word, umiske. What's a miski? What is this word? It is a harness. Barzel, and you insert this harness, this sounds like a bit, in the nostrils of the nose. You have this Misach Shabbos. Are you allowed to take an animal? Are you allowed to allow an animal to go outside on Shabbos carrying this mitzvah of Shvisas Behemtai? Just like you are not allowed to do malach on Shabbos, you're not allowed to have your animals do malach on Shabbos. You're allowed to have your kelim do malach on Shabbos. You're allowed to recharge electronical devices on Shabbos, because there's no prohibition of shvisas kelim, but there's a prohibition of shvisas behemto. So just like you are not allowed to carry on Shabbos, you are not allowed to allow your animals to carry on Shabbos, unless your animals make it in b'chatzeros. Like we've been learning. You have an animal in Bayis, in the Chatzar, in the Mabli, they have to have it in the Chatzeras. But Shvisas Behemta, yeah, that's a joke, of course. The animal is tuffle to the Baal Bayis. But, there it discusses what type of things you're allowed to have your animal wear when it goes out into the Rishos Sarabin. Now, then look in the parentheses. The parentheses, it says, Tsarichin. Rashi says, I don't understand. Rashi is very precise. Rashi says the word chachi is a tabas, is a ring. And the ring typically goes where the ring goes, in the lips. And the miski is a bit. And the bit typically goes in the nostrils, in the nose. Because I didn't explain it correctly when I first told it to you. This is what Rashi says. I mean, it all depends how you learn the Rashi. But Rashi says the metzias is, at least from his understanding in his day, you put the chachi, chachi is a ring, and the ring was attached to the lip. And you would guard the animal by pulling this ring, which pulled the lip, and obviously it's very painful, so the animal's going to follow you without any trouble. And the miski is a bit, which is put in the nose. So Rashi's question is, why then? What? Choch v'nezem? Abbas v'chumas, the clay midyan.
What parsha?
Chukas. Chukas, the clay midyan. I think it's the clay midyan. Choch v'nezem, Abbas v'chumas, Agil v'chumas. These different clay midyan which they got from the battle. So we have over here these two things. So Rashi is asking a question that L'chayra, it's the pasuk is the other way around. It should be chachi bisfasecha, and it should be the miski be'apecha. So why then is it reversed? What is going? Why are the words reversed? Rashi leaves this with a tsarich in. But the truth is, we had an idea. We mentioned something like this a few days ago. That this is very common in Tanakh, where the pasuk deliberately takes, let's say, two items, and it should be matched up two with two, but it's inverted. And the reason why it's inverted is to bring out an idea that, like in this example, the control is so complete that it's as if you can interchange one for the other. Now, I don't know the details, but obviously there is an advantage of guarding an animal with a ring, and there is a disadvantage. And with regard to a bit, it's just the opposite. The disadvantage of a ring is the advantage of using a bit. And the advantage of using a ring is the disadvantage of using a bit. There is a relation. Each one has a ma'il and a chasarn, and each one's ma'il and chasarn is the opposite of the other. When Hashem says to Sancheriv, you are nothing more than a tool in my hands. I have the ultimate control. I know every single thing that you do. I'm watching. I see everything. And when I decide it's enough, I want you to leave. You will leave. I will just take you back home. And the way Hashem says I will return you, I am controlling you, is Hashem deliberately interchanges the terms, the bit, and the ring with the nose and the lip to show that I have the milus of both. My control is so complete. What's a mile here, what would normally be a disadvantage, by me is an advantage. What normally is a disadvantage in this situation, by me is an advantage. It represents the utter, complete control that I have over you. And this concept you find many places. You have to look, you study very well, because especially you're dealing with the Bima Chonim, you're dealing over here with this, there's a lot of repetition. And a lot of repetition, you're always matching up words to ideas. And if you look carefully, sometimes it's just the opposite. It's exactly the point. The point is to intermingle everything together to bring out that the control and the theme that we're trying to express is more complete than can possibly even be imagined. We're using physical terms because everything has to be described in a physical way, but in concept, Hashem is thoroughly in control. That's an idea here. I don't remember we had it. We had it before. I don't recall exactly what we had it before. We had the same idea, but
if you read the pasuk, the simple taich, is the pasuk correct? In other words, you put the ring in the nose and you put the bit.
Seemingly not. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense because the chachi is not something that you put in the nose. The chachi is something which you put in the lip.
Oh, the type of chachi, what is it?
A ring. It means a ring.
A ring, right.
So if you're going to take the possibility, you're going to have to say we're dealing with some unusual.
You're only an apecha is nose, no?
Right. So
the possibility, the way you touch it does make sense.
But it's not. That's not the way it's.
That's not the way Rashi tells you.
No, but it's not. It's not true. Like if you say to, it's just not the way. It's not. If you go back in time when people had animals and they had different tools to guard animals, no one would say, I'm going to take the chafti and put it in the nose of my animal. They would look at you and they would say, you're speaking nonsense. No one speaks like that.
I hear what you're saying. But why do you have to say it's Rashi? Make it out of the
way. I don't know. That's another question. Who wrote those, who put in those parentheses? Yeah, L'chor, it's not Rashi. It's an editor. There'll be a lot of questions about the Rashis. I mean, we have faith that the Rashis in Yeshaya are Rashi. In Nehemiah, Ezra, Nehemiah, and maybe Daniel, I don't remember exactly. There are certain parts of Tanakh which it's not Rashi. The assumption is it was written by someone else, even though it's called Rashi. But Yeshaya, as far as I know, is Rashi. And who wrote the premises? L'chor, it's not Rashi, but that's the tzarechin, because it doesn't make sense. You don't use the word chachi in connection with apech. You don't use the word niski in connection with misvasach.
And you're doing that based on other times that you see this.
Yes. So the answer is that that's very common. That's how the psukim are written. That's how the idea. It's not English. It's not something which has to be grammatically correct. There are ideas being expressed in the pasuk. There are a collection of words which are contributing to those ideas. But those words do not necessarily are not necessarily translated in a linear fashion. You got to take the entire pasuk, all the words, understand the concept, and then every word contributes to the idea. But don't necessarily try to read it mila by mila. There's also the ta'amim, so you can't just ignore the fact that there is some degree of it being read in a certain fashion. If you look at the mitzvah says chachi. Came the mitzvah Sion, chachi hu tabas. It's a ring, shechusam belechi, in the cheek. So the cheek is really the lip. And the cheek is the same thing as what Rashi says, is the same thing. Belechi habehema she'asokim roim, l'moshchal yodo, to guide it. V'chein v'nasati chachim v'lechayayich, v'licheskel. U'miski hu ke'ein resen, it is a muzzle. K'moy meseg l'chamor, doesn't say more than that. But it's a very good point, because this idea is not unique to this pasuk. If you look closely, we'll try to be more careful and go to other pasukim later on, especially if you get to Perek Nun, there's going to be a lot of very, very difficult pasukim. There you'll get, and also if you look in davening, I don't remember this, and there are examples of this idea in the Nusach HaTfilah as well. What? Ruach HaPech. Okay, but that's Ruach. Okay, that's the nose. That's fine. That makes sense. The Ruach is in the Af. That's simple. That's not a kasha. We're dealing here with a very specific object called a chachi. A chachi is not put in the nose. A chachi is put in the lip, in the cheek. What is put in the nose? The miski is put in the nose. So the pasuk here should be reversed. It should say chachi bisvasecha and a miski bi'apecha. The answer is, what's the concept? The concept is Hashem is telling Sancheirev, I am in control of you. I guide you. When I want, you will conquer. When I want, you will be defeated. You will leave. You will return home. And just like you guide an animal with these two objects called a chachi and a miski, and each one has a maila and a chasaron, Hashem is saying that by me, everything is a maila. And to bring out this point that everything by me is a maila, and I am unlimited in what I can do, even greater than what a human being can do with an animal, I'm going to reverse the terms to show you that by me I'm above and beyond what can be done here in this world. Okay, let's go further. Now we go to Pasuk Lamed. This is the Sana. Hashem is telling Yeshaya the following. Yeshaya is telling Chizkiyahu the following. At this point in time, there is a siege. It's an ace tzara. The Jews are terrified. They're about to be killed. And Sancheirev already has proven himself. He has conquered the world. And he's waving his hand and he is cursing and he's saying the most horrifying things to Bnei Yisrael. They're terrified. And besides being terrified, they're starving to death. There was a siege. There was a massive siege. There's no food. They've destroyed all the food and vegetation. And it was a great problem. So Hashem says to Yeshaya to tell Chizkiyahu, do not worry. When the time comes, I will cause him to return home. His army will be defeated, miraculously. When that will occur, it's not going to solve the problem. Because, okay, even if we'll merit this great miracle that Sancheirev will suddenly disappear, we're anyway going to die. Because we're going to starve to death. There's no food left. So even if every one of his soldiers drops dead, which happened, which was something which I never imagined, anyway, we're going to die. What are we going to eat? What are we going to drink? It takes a year for the field to produce grain. What are we going to do? So Hashem says, don't worry about that either. Just like this miracle will occur, this incredible, awesome miracle, that you never would imagine that all, suddenly 185,000 generals are just going to die. When that happens, use that as a source of inspiration for the next miracle. The next miracle is you'll be able to survive on the few weeds that you'll find outside in the fields. Even though it's impossible, to go out into the fields, there's nothing, it's been scorched, it's been destroyed by the enemy. There's just a stalk of grain here, a stalk of grain there. There's some aftergrowth. Don't worry. Just take the few stalks of grain, bring it into the threshing house and the millstones, and begin the process of baking bread, and you'll see, miraculously, the small amount of aftergrowth will suffice for Bnei Yisrael for the entire year. Now, next problem. Okay, even if that's going to happen right now, this is occurring during the sixth year of the Shemitah cycle. Okay, very good. So Hashem is telling that you're going down. But the problem, what are we going to do now? When the miracle is over, it's immediately going to be Shemitah. And Shemitah, you're not allowed to plant. So Hashem says, don't worry. The year after, the aftergrowth, which comes after the first aftergrowth, the year of Shemitah, I'll also cause there to be a miracle. There'll be enough grain that will grow on its own without cultivating the land that will suffice for the entire population for that year. So basically, Hashem is saying that for 2 years, you'll have what to eat. And then in the third year, it'll be the first year of the Shemitah cycle. You'll get to work right away, and you'll be very successful. The land will thrive, it will produce anything that you want, and you'll immediately have food for in the third year. So that's what Pasuk says. Zelecholos, this shall be Zelecholos. This miracle that I'm telling you is going to happen, that Sancheriv will return back home on the same road which he has come, shall be for you a sign that you will not starve to death. Ochol hashanah, you will eat this year. Sofiach. Sofiach means the aftergrowth. Just weeds that are growing in the field in the wild. Uvashanah hashenis. And then in this year afterwards, which is, according to Chazal, it was Shemitah. So even though the enemy has departed and we're free to work the field, Hashem has told us, no, you're not allowed to work the field because it's Shemitah. Don't worry. In that year, you will eat shochis. Shochis is a very unusual word. It does not appear anywhere. Everyone struggles to define what it means. So some learn it means simply, it's a play on the word sofiach. Well, I don't know if it's a play on the word, what the relationship is, but it means the aftergrowth that comes after the aftergrowth. A second level of aftergrowth. There's nothing in the fields. So you find a piece of stalk here, a stalk there, but you'd expect the following year to be even less. Because it's already a double gleaning. No, you'll eat in the year afterwards shochis, the aftergrowth that grows after the aftergrowth. That is one interpretation. Another interpretation means shochis means, it's a term that's used to refer to aftergrowth of fruit trees, of an orchard. Sofiach is aftergrowth of a field, grain, wheat, barley, spelt, all of those, all the grains. Shochis is aftergrowth of an orchard, referring to fruit. So in the first year, you'll eat the leftover grain in the fields that the enemy has not succeeded in destroying. And the year afterwards, you'll eat the shochis, the aftergrowth of the fruits. Uvashana hashlishis. And in the third year, ziru, you will plant. The kitzru, you will harvest. Vinitu kramim, you will plant vineyards. So ziru refers to, the beginning of the process refers to planting grain. Kitzru is to harvest the grain. Vinitu kramim, you will plant fruits, the orchards. The ichlu, piryam, and you will eat their food. Pasuk lamed aleph. Yasa pleitas beis Yehuda hanishara sherish. And in that year, so this either can be taken literally, it can be taken metaphorically, then that year, the remnant, the survivors of beis Yehuda hanishara, they will add sherish lamata, a root below, V'asa fri l'mala, and will produce fruit above. A tree, a mature tree, does not produce new roots. Once a tree reaches maturity, then every year produces fruit. But the roots, pretty much, they stagnate. That's it. The roots, tree develops, the roots go deeper and deeper into the ground, and that's it. Maybe it grows a little bit, but it's insignificant. And every year, for the remainder of the life of the tree, it produces new fruit. Hashem is saying there's going to be exponential growth. Not only will the growth take place, lamala, every year there'll be fruit, the roots below will expand. The base, the foundation of Klal Yisrael at this point in time will grow. It will be a time of great growth in the infrastructure of Klal Yisrael. It's a very interesting idea that you need a new infrastructure. The Yasva Pleita Space Yehuda and Nishav Shoyresh Lamata. The roots will spread below. The Asa Fri Lamal, and of course there will be a thriving economy and will produce food Lamal upwards.
Ki mi expanded the boundaries of Yerushalayim
uh-huh.
because there were refugees that came in from the 10 tribes, so he expanded the boundaries.
Beautiful. So that's what it means here, the Shoresh Lamata. The actual, it's beautiful. The Shoresh Lamata, actually the actual infrastructure of Yerushalayim will be expanded besides the fact that it will produce a thriving economy and a thriving society. Pasuk on the base, Ki mi Yerushalayim teitzei sheiris, from Yerushalayim will come forth a sheiris, a remnant. Ufleita, and that's another word for She'eris. Mehar, Tzion. Okay, I don't know the difference. This always Yerushalayim and Tzion. Ki mitzion teitzei sro dvar Hashem. Yerushalayim, you have this all over Tanakh. Yerushalayim and Tzion. Here we match up. It's a very big real mystery to really define the difference between Yerushalayim and... I mean, there are many perushim. I'm well aware. There are many perushim to explain the difference between Yerushalayim and Tzion, but all of the perushim have problems. Because I don't think there is one perush which captures every single reference. Maybe there is. But here you notice the word that Yerushalayim is put in the connection with the She'eris, and the word Tzion is used in the connection with the word Pleita. And similarly, these are the same words. Then the pasuk says something very important. Kinas Hashem Tzevakos Ta'aseh Zos. Now we know whenever it says Hashem Tzevakos, we've learned it many times, it refers to war. Hashem, in his role as a general, a warrior, a person who conducts battles. And Hashem says here that this salvation, this is very important, this salvation that's going to occur to the Jewish people at this point in time, it's not going to be in their merit, which is frightening. It's not because you're deserving that I should save you, even though we know that Hezekiah brought about an enormous revolution. Torah, there was learning Torah, and there was Musar, and so on and so forth, and he took away the bamos, but Hashem says that's not enough. You don't have enough merit that you should deserve this miraculous survival. I'm doing it for my own sake. Because Rav Shoke and the Sancheriv, they cursed Hashem. They were Mavarich Hashem. Mechorif and Magadif. And it was done in a very public way. Now today, unfortunately, we live in a society where we're so desensitized to all of these terrible things that go on in the world, like doesn't even dawn on us. But in the ancient times, people lived with dignity. It was a certain different way of living, and this was an incredible chil Hashem. It's hard for us to, again, we're so far removed from these societies where a person could come to the holy city of Yerushalayim, and everyone is standing around the walls of the city by the pool, and this general Rav Shoke, who was a Yisrael Mumar, he comes and he says Nivel Pen, and he's Mechareif or Begadeif, and they ask him to speak quietly, speak in a different language, don't say this publicly, you're here in a holy city, don't humiliate the people, don't traumatize the people. No! And he is Shtark at the Torah. He gets up and he screams, he was Mechareif and Begadeif Hashem in the worst way possible. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, again, you have to understand the world. At that point in time, Hashem says, I, in this circumstance, cannot allow this to happen. I cannot allow this to happen. I cannot allow such arrogance, such brazen chutzpah to exist. And therefore Hashem says, therefore kinas Hashem tzivakos ta'asezos. Let's see Rashi. Rashi says, on the base, kinas Hashem tzivakos sheyikane lishmo. Hashem is doing this to take revenge for his name. V'loy machlas zuchus shebiyedchem. Now here Rashi's scary words, lamanu. From here we learn shetomo zuchus amos. That the zuchus of their forefathers, whether it refers to Avraham, Yitzchak, or Yaakov, refers to the Shvat, refers to the entire Shalshelis Hadoros, it's tomo, it's over. They no longer at this point in time, at the time of Chizkiyahu, had the zuchus, frightening, had the zuchus of us. You couldn't say that Hashem, we need it. Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov, gone. And it's only because of the kinas Hashem tzvachos.
What about
Tfilah
today? So
no, we said,
it's
a Machlokes. The Gemara is Machlokes. I don't remember the details. The Gemara Tosfos says, Tosfos, I don't remember the details from the Torah, says that even though it's Zuchus Av Ovos Tama, Beris Avos Lo Tama. There are two things. Something called Zuchus Avos, and there's something called Beris Avos. Hashem made a Beris, covenant, treaty, with the Avos, that we will survive, that Klal Yisrael as a whole will receive Eretz Yisrael, we will survive, and there will always be a Klal Yisrael.
That's
a much lower level than Zuchus. How do you define these levels? I don't know. Zuchus Avos is an expression of love and chiba, that in their merit it's as if they're alive, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes to Nimishur Sadin. Bris Avos means this is a contract. What can I do? It's I have no choice. I have a document. Do I want to do this? No. I'm not going to do this with any great love, any great will. I have no choice. I have to honor the document. I signed the document. And then what could I do? That's what we've gained from the Avos, that we're guaranteed. But just because Hashem guaranteed doesn't mean he's going to do it as safe upon the Avos, with love and enthusiasm. It's just going to be business. So that's what Hashem here says, that as far as Zuchus Avos you don't have. Bris Avos you have, and I'm going to, but here it's not even Bris Avos, it's because of Kinas Hashem Tzavokos, it's the jealousy of the Shvarach, we cannot tolerate this Chilul Hashem. Look at the Mitzvot Tavit, the Mitzvot Pasek Lame Beis, Kinas Hashem Ki Yikane L'Shmo, Asher Cheref Rav Shokei V'San Cheref. He just elaborates upon Rashi, Hashem cannot tolerate the cheref and the giduf of Sancheref and Rav Shok, and that's why he's going to perform this great miracle. Yeah.
So if they had come just as they did, and they just did business like an army, here they have not gone through this whole breaking process, it's very possible Hashem would allow, you would tell us many times, they were the last remnants of Klal Yisrael. Hashem would allow
it. It could have been, they would have been destroyed, but they would have been a few refugees, and from that Klal Yisrael would have been rebuilt. Look at the Chorban, the Chorban Bayis. It was the end. There was no bias. Okay, there were many survivors. Let's talk about Tzom Gedalia. When Gedalia and Achikim was killed, that was already the end. But there were a few survivors. They were taken to Rome. They were taken. That's the Bayis Shem, the Bayis Rishon. They were taken to Babel. There were survivors. The survivors rebuilt Klal Yisrael. Look in modern times. Eretz Yisrael was bottled. There was no one living in Eretz Yisrael for I don't know how, a few hundred years until. There was a very small Yisha, but whatever the situation is, there will always be a Klal Yisrael, they will be rebuilt from the few survivors. But as a nation as a whole, here, Yerushalayim was under the control of a Melech, Malchus of David, it was a Beis HaMikdash. That could have been destroyed. And what would have been with Klal Yisrael? Golos would have begun at that point in time. And when would there be a Bayis Sheni, Bayis Shlishi, when the few survivors could rebuild to the point when they were ready? Okay, so we'll stop here. Pasuk Lamed. Okay.